You are listening to Yadda Chat, a podcast produced by Yadda Yadda Noise.
And hosted by Alice Godber, who is currently studying an MA in creative practice at Hull College.
And Lucy Francis, who will come at the show from the education sector around the arts.
This podcast will interview Hull creatives and talk about our local industry.
The aim of this is to try and capture the wave of frustration the creative sector is going through, whilst also looking at some of the positives that might have come from these recent months. Hello and welcome to episode 2. We are joined by Louise Crammond. Hi, Louise.
Hi, Alice. Hi, Lucy.
So tell us a bit about yourself, Louise. What is it that you do?
I do a lot of things, but I'm going to talk about my artwork and what I do. And I do what some people call yarn bombing, guerrilla knitting. It's very much about creating pieces from yarn using crochet, or some people do knitting, and then installing it in a public setting. Now, the work that I do at the moment is very much sanctioned by local area teams. They're quite happy for me to go out and create things. But it is also, in some areas, it's kind of like they're calling it a feminine graffiti, which I don't agree with because it's stereotyping. But it is a form of street art that can be political, whimsical, funny. But one of the crucial things for me about it is that it's a collective piece of art. So I work with local communities on some projects. I have my maker crew. So we all create different parts of whatever it is. So one example that a lot of people have seen is the whole poppy trail. So I've had lots of people crochet or knit or sew poppies for me, including an 87-year-old retired fisherman who has made, over the 3 years that's been running, nearly 200 poppies for me. And he's amazing to work with. And through that, he's actually become involved in other things and other projects as well. So it's not just about creating something that goes out into the public. It's about what's behind that as well. But the piece of art that's in the public eye is time sensitive. So it only goes up for so long, usually around about 3 to 4 weeks at the most. And the idea behind that is to change people's perspective. I've been installing this work in an urban environment. When we walk to work, drive to work, we stop seeing what is around us constantly. It's just, think about the last time, although in lockdown you might not remember, think about the last time you actually walked to work or walked to the corner shop or walked the dog. Just try and picture that walk in your mind now. It's something you do every day. Can you remember what you saw on that day, or can you just remember the beginning and the end of the journey? Mm. We've become insensitive to our environment. We've lost that. We live in an urban environment. It's hard. It's grey. And particularly at this time of the year, we've lost the colour of the trees as well. The idea of installing these pieces of art that usually end up being a tree wrap, so there's different pieces wrapped around a tree, is for you to suddenly notice the environment again. You suddenly see it differently and it changes it. And then when you take it down 3 weeks later, you've changed it again. And all of a sudden, that walk to work where you've suddenly stopped seeing the tree wrap, you see the tree. So it's that awareness of your environment. And that's very much, it's almost like there's three parts to it. There's the actual installation and changing how people see things. There's the creation of that, and there's the collective action. So that's the kind of work that I do.
Wow. No, that sounds really good. I mean, I love guerrilla knitting. That's something that I've not done out in public, but when I did my A-levels a fair few years ago, those listening won't be able to see it, but behind me there's a painting on my wall, and that was all sort of inspired by guerrilla knitting and yarn bombing and everything.
That's interesting.
It was the last painting I did.
I was going to, when I looked at that and I could see it behind you, I was like, that looks like a yarn bomb tree.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the colour. And that's the other thing I like about this work, is the colour and the use of colour. I just love the brightness, because you usually use an acrylic yarn because any other yarn doesn't really wear very well.
Ah,
And those colours are, yes, useful information. Those colours bring something to your walk or what you see. And the amount of people when I put these installations up that stop and talk to me and go, that's made me smile. I like it. I've with the Poppy installation, I actually had veterans and retired fishermen crying because of the impact that it had on them. It's really powerful just to change how people see their environment.
In order to engage with the community then, do you do like workshops or anything like that to help people who can't crochet, for example, if they want to create work for it?
That's absolutely, that's another part of what I do. So my business is Hay Workshops, which started originally 7 years ago was Hull and East Yorkshire Creative Workshops, and over the years it's shortened to Hay Workshop. And yes, does it make sense now? It's not Hay, as in Hay.
I didn't know that.
So the whole yarn bombing thing, and before that, Hay Workshop started when I was teaching millinery. I wear many hats, pun intended. And I've been teaching workshops for years. I was a dance teacher from about 26 in Rakshaki, or we know it as belly dance. Over the years, I've done a lot of creative things, which has kind of culminated in this and delivering the workshop. Before the lockdown, I delivered workshops all over the city. If I could get funding, they were free or there would be a charge to them. The millinery ones, I did so many of them, I actually did that through Groupon. So I have, in terms of teaching and workshop, I would probably have taught thousands of people by now.
Mm-hmm.
So at the moment, what I do is Hay Workshops I have as a Facebook page. I do live feeds and I do activities on the live feed. So that's basically a free workshop. I also do one-to-one and group workshops via Zoom. So they are still going on, but I've got to say my first love is to do them face to face. I love interacting with people. I love sharing skills with people, motivating people. And actually, through all of that teaching that I've ever done, what I truly wish to inspire is actually confidence in people's creativity. The biggest thing that holds people back, myself included, is confidence. And the confidence to put your head above the parapet and say, this is mine, I can do this. To challenge that misconception that people have around art is A, that it is only a painting or a drawing, but that you have to be able to paint and draw to be an artist or to be creative. And that's what I want people, when they work with me, you don't have to be able to draw. You don't even have to be able to crochet. You can go and wrap something. It can be any age, any level. Also, it's me driving them and giving them the confidence to actually do something. So, yes, workshops are a big part of what I do.
Great.
Louise, this is sort of like feeding into that. With lockdown and the pandemic, how have you been impacted during it? How is it, obviously, in terms of workshops, it sort of leaves you being unable to do them face-to-face, so you're having to do quite a lot online.
The lockdown has massively impacted me. At the beginning of March 2020, it was going to be my year. I had so much work, not just in terms of artwork, workshops, consultation work, using participatory appraisal. I literally was panicking, thinking, I don't know how I'm going to fit all this in. And literally with one fell swoop, it was wiped out. And it put me under huge financial pressure, and still has. And actually trying to deliver that and recapture that is going to be very difficult, because how the lockdowns have worked, and now they're in lockdown 3.0, each time we come out of one, I rebuild it. People are hungry for this. They want to be involved. They want to be creative. And actually having had time to spend at home, so where people have suddenly become time rich, whereas before they were time poor, they have suddenly been excited by creativity. And they're hungry for something. Mm. So I rebuild it, then they lock us down again. It's taken away. And then I rebuild it again. And this lockdown 3.0 is actually some of the businesses I was working with, the art cafes and stuff, have closed. So the impact is huge, and it's going to take a long time to recover. Even though I do things virtually, it's never on the level it is in terms of delivering workshops. I've had to work out how to film things, different platforms. So now I've even hit TikTok. I'm down with the kids.
Better than me, Louise. I don't even know how to get on it.
I do love my social media. And I've got to say, whilst that is all very doom and gloom, it's not the only thing that's happened. I've had to learn new skills. And when the lockdown is lifted, I will still have those. The way that I use social media is massive. And people are actually asking for virtual socials. One of the things that I had before the lockdown, I had a group called One Stitch at a Time. And the focus of that group was to change an environment one stitch at a time. So people are now asking me for the virtual social. So that's something I'm going to be developing and creating over the next few months, because this is also a path back into the workshops and giving people that opportunity to learn, to engage and be social. We are so isolated right now. So it has given me opportunities in another way. It's not the route, to be honest, I would have chosen, but it's the route I have to take, so I'm going to make the best of it.
I think one of the things that you said earlier though as well about your work kind of re-engaging people with their environments outside of the house and familiar environments, for me, like, obviously this period has been the most time I've spent at home. Well, ever since I bought this house, it's the most time I've spent in it ever, and probably will do ever again. And in the period where we were locked down, but the kids were at school and I was able to take the kids to school every day, before when I was just working full time, I obviously was just rushing them to school and getting on the motorway. And so now walking them to school and watching how they engage with the environment and everything has made me much more connected to my external environment than I was. And I think that'll be something positive for your work after this as well, that more people, I think, will be connected with their local external environment because it's the only place they can go.
I think that's absolutely true. And also when you look at transitions, I work with the Pat Foundation and One Hull of a Forest, who work with veterans. One of the things we looked at there is the transition from service to civilian life. And as we worked through that, I realised that transition process, although it's different for each group that you look at, the process is the same. So whether you transition from service to civilian, whether you are coming out of the looked after system to civilian life again, or from addiction to civilian life, there's a transition process. And I think that's one of the things that's going to hit us with COVID. We have been locked down for so long. We've lost, you know, for people that have been furloughed for a year, if you were unemployed for a year, you would get additional support because you would have lost your skills. So we've got people that are going to transition from this very closeted life as a society to come back into interacting with each other is going to be a challenge. So that's one of the things that I hope the work that I do, it offers it on layers. You can watch virtually. You can interact virtually. You can be a maker crew at home. You can be part of building the installation. You can be part of putting it out. There's many different layers. And creativity is one of those things that most people haven't failed at and they've had a positive experience with. One of the things we have lost through lockdown is the arts, the creative art. We've all missed them. I mean, just the thought, I was thinking the other day, the last time I went to the cinema. Theatre, and I was like,
so
I know, just to do that, to go out and have that experience with other people, to go and see a live band, a spoken word event, or just to interact with people. But how do we make sure that people are confident enough to do that? How do we transition them? And I think that's something we really need to consider as artists, is how do we support that transition, not just for ourselves, but for the community, our audience, our participants.
I agree, yeah. And I think that there's an assumption that there's kind of more vulnerable groups within that, but I don't know that there is. I think there's going to be surprises in terms of who has felt vulnerable during this time, really. Because, yeah, you can say that it's the older generation that are clearly obviously more vulnerable given that they're higher risk, but, you know, like I've spoken before about that kind of social capacity of the younger ones that's going to be so affected, you know, 2 or 3 year olds who were being told constantly, don't go near that person, don't, you can't see your friends, no, you know, like at that age, to not have any kind of social development for such a long time it'll impact lots of young ones in a massive way, I think. And dependent on how their parents are handling it with them as well, you know, like I've very much tried to keep it away from the boys as much as I can. I will say, well, we can't because of the virus, but it'll be gone soon and I'll kind of brush over it a bit. There's so much spoken about it. Everyone's talking about it. And when you do engage with the grandparents, obviously you're talking to the grandparents about it and you're talking about the news and they hear all of that. It's an interesting time, but it is an interesting time for the creative arts, definitely, in terms of how we respond to it, because it is the sector that will hold the legacy and carry the legacy more than anything else. This industry will be the thing that kind of tells the story in 50 years' time.
I think, yes, there's no other industry that has been impacted as heavily.
Mm.
As we was talking only yesterday about art in health, the fact that we know that being creative is part of that transition for people to build the confidence for them, both mental and physical well-being. And we know the research I've been reading recently says about one of the things that people take up in times of change or recovery is creating. And in particular, they talk about crochet and textiles and the fact that because it's one stitch at a time, there's a meditative process to that. It quietens a mind that is overwhelmed by stimuli, the news. I mean, I get to the point now where I just don't watch it.
Mm.
Yeah, can't watch the news anymore. It's just too much. I get like so overwhelmed by it.
And I think that's why we, in as creatives, as artists, we need to really work together, stand up and say, we are here. We've missed you. You've missed us. Let's do something about this now. And I think we can help the transition. I think we facilitate the transition, actually. What I'm hoping the lockdown has shown people is what they've missed. They say you never miss something until it's gone. So I'm hoping that people will just be crowding around music, theatre, arts, creativity, and saying, we need you, we want you back.
Yeah.
And that actually we are almost that yellow brick road to bring people back into a society where we're engaging, we're interacting, we're living again, because are we really living right now or existing? And maybe that's what art does. It allows us to live rather than exist. I don't know. It's just one of those thoughts that flashes across my mind.
Well, it's certainly the thing that brings people together, isn't it? Like we were saying yesterday, in terms of those kind of 4 key things that bring people together. One of those being food and drink. But I mean, even that, you know, there's an artistry to food. There's an artistry to cocktails and things. And there is an art form there anyway. And then obviously music and creative arts, visual arts, theatre arts. So, yeah, we are basically the industry that brings everyone together. That's why we're the one that's suffering the most. But we will bring people together again, won't we?
I think we need to lead the way. And I think we as artists need to tell people this. And funders and businesses need to actually recognise that we will bring that back and actually support us better. So often artists and creatives are underpaid, undervalued, underestimated. You know, this is a time now to actually say to people, this is what you could have won almost, and actually fund us fairly.
Yeah. Like you were saying before, with the, you know, how we've all been changed, it's not going to be a quick fix at all, is it? No. I know with myself, I've changed in some ways. I'm a lot more sort of anxious now. If I'm going somewhere where there's people, never before would I be, worried about it, but now I am. Even sometimes doing Zoom or anything, I get quite worked up about it. I've had the odd sort of panic attack, which is not fun at all. I think everyone is sort of going through this, like, aren't they? Please.
Yeah, absolutely. The first time, I'm not very good at queuing at the best of time. And I tried in the first lockdown when we was queuing outside the supermarket. I went and I'd driven around 3 supermarkets trying to avoid a queue, and I'd ended up at Tesco on that, and I'd actually got the trolley and I'd got in the queue, and then I had a massive panic attack. and I just had to leave the trolley and go. I couldn't cope with queuing and seeing people. It was all just too much and too overwhelming. And I think there's so many of my friends have reached out to me in terms of their mental health and their mental well-being. You're not alone. I don't know anyone who hasn't felt it at some point and felt overwhelmed by it. It's like the okie cokie. You're in, you're out, you're in, you're out. It's like, what's it all about?
It's a lack of control, I think, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Just like a constant state of not knowing. From day to day, it changes. You don't know where you are at all, you know.
You're absolutely right, Alice. When you look at child development, and when I did the youth and community degree, what they talked about is children need boundaries. To feel safe, they need to have those so they can test them and push them. Mm. That's why children behave differently with their main caregivers. And at the minute, we don't have them. We don't know. It's like, what is a reasonable distance if you're going to travel to go for a walk? Who's in my bubble? Who isn't in my bubble? Can I go and see that person if I'm a carer? Everything is so vague. And then you just get your head around it. And then they shift the goalposts. And you're having to readjust, so your boundaries are constantly moving and elastic. How are we meant to feel safe? Because you have no perspective of the future. So I've made plans. 3 times I've made plans and developed a solution. I'm very solution focused and orientated. Even I'm now, I'm tired. I'm tired of not knowing what's happening next. Now they're talking about doom and gloom of them being locked down next winter, and I'm like, oh my goodness, what is going on? Someone just tell me what to expect, and I can build around that. I will work with it. So I completely get what you're saying, Alice. It's, you know, if depression is about the past and anxiety is about the future, we're thinking about the future, how the heck are we supposed to manage that?
I think that's why, and I know that everybody that I know that is in this industry at the moment is very focused on that. So how can I adjust it? How can I adapt it? What can I do when I'm in this current situation that's still creative, that's still allowing me to think in that way? And I think as long as you're doing that, then you'll be all right. And I think it's, you know, anxiety and kind of worrying about it, I think that is natural in the current environment because it is completely out of our control. And if we do try to look to the future, we can't. And anxiety is all about the future, really, like you say, isn't it? And about worrying about things that could and couldn't happen, which you do to a level that sometimes is irrational when you're anxious, and now everything seems irrational anyway.
Everything
what we thought would be unheard of is now normal, and it feels that's why I carried on with the installations. Even during the lockdown, I've done the rainbow trees, the poppy trail, the Christmas trees. So people have actually made things, and I've gone out, and even in the different phases of the lockdown, when we could have 6 people together outside, people helped me with
the Those were the days.
Oh, I know, when you could meet outside with 6 people, how glorious. Can you remember when we went in Queen's Garden, Alice, so we could sit and meet there?
I was like, I'm going to bring Louise some gin, then you brought me gin, and you were like, oh, I'm not drinking. And so I was like, what, you just brought me alcohol to drink?
Oh, and Alice, what did you do? Oh no, I can't drink it.
Well, you know, I didn't want to be rude, but, you know, it's fine. I drank it.
I actually sent you home with it, didn't I, in the end? But at the minute as well, even the weather is not helping it, is it? There's a whole host of things. Believe me, when I was taking down the installations last week, my fingers were so numb. I was absolutely frozen. And even when I was putting them up before Christmas, I've still got pieces that I'd created that didn't go up because it was just so cold. I could only stay out for so long. When you're wrapping or tie wrapping 100 crocheted trees to a tree, your fingers can go quite numb. And that, funnily enough, that's the only installation I've had people take from. One of it, because I always do a rainbow. I love rainbows. And I'd done a rainbow of crocheted Christmas trees, and it was going in a spiral around a tree. And someone had very carefully come along and removed a whole rainbow. So there was like a bare spiral. The rest of it was still there.
They really wanted that.
So they took part of it and I replaced that. And then I went back again and they'd taken the rest of the rainbow. And I was like, I'm not replacing that. So someone somewhere has got a rainbow of crocheted Christmas trees hanging somewhere. One of the things about doing this type of art form, you know, when you put it out. Now, I've been lucky in the fact that the local area teams have been very supportive and haven't removed it. But technically, it's illegal because it's been classed as littering. And there are people who've been arrested for this or for trespassing, for going on to places to put these up. But one of the things with this, you know that as soon as you put that up, it could be taken down. So the hundreds and hundreds of hours I may have put into a piece may be gone in a minute. Or, you know, there are other people that will be really protective over it. And the Christmas trees, I did one on Hull Marina. The lock keeper had asked me to do it. And he looked after that for me and made sure that no one damaged it. And then he took it down for me this week, because when I'd taken the others down, I'd forgotten to go to the marina because obviously I'm an airhead sometimes. And I had to give him instructions how to take it down because the wraps that I create are reused. So the trails build year on year. They get longer and bigger and bigger. And I explained it to him and he said, I've never unwrapped a tree before. So this was going on via messenger. So my answer back was, stick with me, kid. I'll introduce you to a world of weird.
Well, we're all learning new skills, aren't we, during this lockdown? Yeah. I was saying the other day to Lucy about how with everything with yada yada, if it wasn't for the lockdowns, I wouldn't have learned how to edit audio. So much of what's happened, what we've been doing, wouldn't have taken place. We'd have been carrying on with the open mics and, you know, the radio shows wouldn't have happened, you know, podcasts. And it's interesting how you sort of have to try and make do with what you have and just find other ways of getting around and doing things. Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree. I remember being sat at your house and we was editing.
you showed me how. I was like, so what is this Audacity? And I remember watching you, like, how... And I was like, really, I was watching really, really hard. I was like, I don't want to miss it and then have to try and get you to do it again.
I said, don't worry about it. You'll be fine. You'll fly with this and look at what you've done.
Thank you. I mean, I can get, you know, it's a learning process. Hopefully, you know, with time, it'll get better and better, hopefully.
I was merely a catalyst, Alice. Everything you've done is really your work. It's amazing, and where yada yada is going and where it's going to be is phenomenal.
Well, if we hadn't have gone to Westall FM that time, and if we hadn't have met, you know, the shows wouldn't have happened, would they? And if we hadn't have gone that day, or we could be all in like a completely different place right now. It's strange to think, isn't it?
Well, my mum always says if some butts were pots and pans, there'd be no need for tinkers. Now older people will get that. And we were talking about, before we started, about why we are where we are now. It's the journey that we took. We were only here because of that journey. And I think you have made the most of everything that's been given to you, Alice. Yes, there are opportunities that happened, meetings that happened, but they happen to many people, but not everyone takes them and makes something. Yeah.
Is that the right phrase? Oh, I said that right. Or is it take it by the bull? I don't know.
Take the bull by the horn.
Okay. Well, nearly. Nearly got it.
We knew where you was going, Alice.
I was like 5% there.
Taken control of that beast and made something out of it.
Alice has got this far, but then we were talking, well, obviously, this is kind of moving you on to the next thing and into Alice about when we talked about you retraining.
Yes, so on our last episode, we discussed how the government would sort of like us creatives to retrain, preferably in cyber, but there was a... and we learned that cyber means computer and not space, which Lucy felt... it's nearly there. And
I would like to train in space.
Yeah, I mean, same.
I can crochet you a hyperbolic plane, if that helps.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Nice.
Anything to get away from the kids for a bit.
There was this online quiz that you could do, and you filled it out, and it's sort of just sort of asking how Have you done one, Louise? Did you fill one out?
I haven't, but all of my artistic, creative friends have done it and posted it on Facebook. And it all comes back that tells them they should be an artist or an actor or a singer.
I don't get it, because like that was the same with Kerry, but for some reason my top job was a horse groom.
What?
A horse groom. I should retrain and become a horse groom, or I should go to war.
Go to war.
So I thought, well, I will do some research about this, and so yeah. Maybe if I decide to go into horse grooming, it seems like it's...
I don't know if I'd trust you with a set of clippers, Alice.
I would start off and get a BTEC, first certificate and diploma in horse groom care, and then I would move on to my level three, and, you know, one day, if I work hard enough, I could be a fully-fledged horse groomer.
I don't know, I'm just imagining you with a set of clippers. It's kind of a scary thought.
Do you have to cut the horses? Brushing the mane.
No, because there's all different clips for horses.
Is there?
Oh. Yeah. There's like a hunter clip, there's quite a few different ones that you
do.
That's
a bit complicated, if I'm honest.
It is very complicated, and even how you do the mane, because there's cutting, there's plucking, there's a few days. I don't even know why I even know this. I'll read anything. I'll read the label off a tin of peas, so I've probably read this somewhere.
I'll start looking into war then, and being a soldier.
Yeah, war's better.
or massaging.
Massaging at the moment is not the place to move, is it?
Yeah, no.
That's hilarious to say. You need to retrain because arts is a bit, you know, it's a bit affected at the moment.
Because
the old virus, but massage, you'll be fine. Yeah.
I think you should look at war then, Alice, and because maybe look at a fight, a battle. What battle is that? Maybe that's what it's saying about you. Are you ready for a battle? A battle of words?
Yeah, there you go.
Ooh, I like where we're going. I had those, like, options. I'm not saying they're bad options, just mean maybe I don't see how it relates to me, but apparently it does. But Lucy is apparently, like, born to be a manager. Are you, Lucy?
I am born to be a manager. I know, which is pretty depressing, to be honest, isn't it? I mean, I would have much rather have got actor, singer, dancer. But yeah, I've got head chef, which I actually would do.
Chef in Turkish means boss.
Does it?
Yeah.
So head boss.
So obviously you're the boss.
I'm just really bossy. That's my problem. Yeah, that questionnaire just thought, well, you are one bossy lady, so...
I'm going to have to do this now, aren't I?
What must I have answered to have brought up horse grooming?
I don't know. Did you say you have a love of animals?
No.
I don't know. Particularly good with hair and hooves?
No.
Did you say you like countryside?
No.
I have no idea. Maybe the algorithm just popped when you put your answers in.
It's all me, and it was just like, she'll take anything on her.
maybe, looking at a conspiracy theory, the camera was on and it saw your amazing locks.
I'm pretty sure I wasn't wearing them. I'd hate to be them. Anyway, Louise, if you had to retrain, you haven't done the questionnaire, but if you could do anything else, what would you do?
I'm a secret geek. Mm. So I would probably go into sciences. It's funny, I was thinking about this earlier. I was topping my science classes, but the school and the age that I am, women, when you chose what were your options at school then, nobody really bothered about you as a woman unless you didn't take any typing or shorthand as an option. So science really wasn't something they sort of pushed us towards. It would be cooking or needlework or shorthand typing. And I loved it, and I loved particularly chemistry and biology. So I think I'd want to do something quite geeky. And I did, this is going to give my age away, but I had a ZX81. which is one of the original home computers, but very different. I actually had, now listen carefully because you'll miss this. You might not understand it, Alice. I had a ZX81 with a 12K RAM pack expansion. So I had a 16K, not megabytes, not gigabytes, not terabytes, K. I had a 16K ZX81. Alice is just looking like she's glazed over. Then you didn't have an operating system. You had to program everything in. And you used to get the BBC computer magazine. And I used to sit with my dad and the keys went, he's like, you get on a computer now, they were like flat. And each key had about 8 different functions. And I used to sit for hours with my dad programming this computer using basic code. And he wanted to know what that is. So it'd take 2 hours to type in 2 pages of text to get a balloon to float across the screen. But the kicker was that because there was no surge protection, every time the fridge switched on, it wiped all the code that we'd put in.
No.
So yes, I'm a secret geek. So in answer to that question, if I could do anything, I would probably love to be a hacker.
Went in a different direction. I was thinking, science teacher, educator. Yeah.
You know what? Morris will be pleased because you're talking about cyber there. So
I want to be one of these weirdo hackers. I've got the first part. That's fine. I'm covered. I just need the hacking.
God, like when you've just described that, Louise, in terms of your experience with computers. Where we are now with technology, that literally sounds like it was 200 years ago. And unless you've just had a very, very good, like, skincare regime, that wasn't that long ago, was it? It's just mental to think where we are now with cyber. It's crazy, isn't it?
So then the ZX Spectrum came out at the same time as we had pound coins that came out. That's how old I am. I remember we used to have lunchtime computer clubs where we could bring in our Spectrum or ZX. No one had anything to do with my ZX81 by then because, like, duh. You know, if you was anybody, you had an Amstrad or a Spectrum. Then we used to sit with it plugged into the school TV that they used to put into the room so we could do it lunch and play. The games then were just like, we did the adventure game, you know, like D&D on a screen. Oh my God, I'm giving my nerdiness and geekery away, aren't I?
We love Pac-Man. It.
Pac-Man was like the best game on the Amstrad.
Yeah, it was really. My brother had the Commodore 64, you know, where you put the cassette in to load your programs.
I've gone quiet, can you tell? There was no such thing as the
internet. I mean, what was the first? How old was I? The first dial-up I used was in my 20s. Mm. And I've still got a Hotmail email address that I set up in 25 years ago.
Yeah, I've got my first Hotmail. Yeah.
And that was when the only way you could communicate with each other was MSN or AOL.
I was still behind with all that, to be honest. When I joined my degree course, they were all on MSN. And I was like, what's MSN? And they were like, are you for real? I was like, I don't know what it is. And they were all messaging each other. And I sort of tried to get into it, but I never really did. It's just, and I'm still the same now. I've just, I've really let the side down in terms of any cyber abilities of Boris's desires for us to move over to that because I'm useless with it all. But, you know.
I have the geekery. So yeah, Boris will good. Be fine with me. I'm going to be. So I'm just watching that. Have you seen Mr. Robot on Netflix?
No.
It's really good. It's a hacker story and it's got lots of plots and subplots and conspiracy and mental health and all sorts of stuff that goes on in it. Or CSI or Criminal Minds. I'm that, you know, that weird hacker that they've always got. It's usually a female, isn't it? It's like a little bit strange. Doesn't fit into societal norms. You can see where I'm going here. That probably better than being an artist. And certainly, I don't know, development work. Yeah, they're all weirdos in development work. That's fair. So yeah, there's, as long as whatever industry I go into, I can be the weirdo that I am, I'll be fine. I'll adapt.
Yeah.
So sort
I'm
of
sure
like
you'll be well.
Getting into the sort of finishing off the area. So the future. This is quite an open question. Go with it however you see fit. What are your hopes for the future and what do you want to see happen?
Wow, that's an enormous question.
It's an enormous question, but try, you know, like 5 words.
I would love to expand the work that I would do. I want to do large pieces. There's an artist called Olek who does enormous pieces. She's covered the Bull in Times Square, she's covered tanks, she's covered buildings with yarn, crochet. And she's now working on, she's using VR units to create, she's crocheting with them. So she's creating these pieces that people can travel through. It works amazing. And she's really, they labelled her at one point as the Saki crocheter. So she puts in a lot of messages that, and she'll crochet words and put them up about feminism, about body, about sex. She does these pieces where she crochets a whole room and then people sit in and they're naked and they're crocheting a bodysuit. I love her work and the controversy that it has. So it's really to upscale it and to create pieces for myself as an artist as well as the collective pieces. So that's where I would like to go artistically, but of course I would love for the workshops to be up and running, to be interacting with the community. Yeah. I want for the future, I would like some of the past back is really what I would like. And as for everything else, I don't know. I mean, where are we going with the world? I mean, if we continue, then obviously I'm just going to become an incredible hacker again that works under a pseudonym and isn't really known, but I will bring down capitalism.
Brilliant.
And while you're doing that, Alice can give you a massage.
Yeah, I'll brush your hair, you know, whatever. I can be a personal bodyguard, bring in my military training.
Yeah.
I'm all in one package.
Yeah.
Go for it, Alice. I like it. I like that package.
It's a great package, definitely. All right, thank you, Louise. It's been wonderful talking to you.
Thanks for having me.
Bye.
If you want to see what Louise is up to and maybe get involved in one of her upcoming projects, you can find her on Instagram and Facebook at Hey Workshops. Thank you for listening to the other chat. You can find out more about this podcast and platform through visiting our website at www.yada-yada-noise.com. You can also follow our social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all at Yada Yada Noise. Yada.
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 Yada.